One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Good Light Project is brought to you by Understood Explains, a podcast that's like a beacon for parents navigating the special education system. Hosted by Juliana Urtube, a special education expert, this season is all about individualized education plans, or IEPs. Juliana breaks down complex topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP in a way that's easy to grasp. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains about the difference between IEPs and 504 plans, and I was struck by the balance of empathy and practical advice. It's not just about understanding the system. It's about empowering parents and caregivers to advocate for their children, which is just so important. So I've known a number of people who've had to literally scramble to figure out how to advocate for their kids when the system seemed to just make it so hard to get the support that they need and deserve. So if you're a parent navigating this world, or even just wondering if it's right for your family, I encourage you to give Understood Explains a listen. Search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. It's like having a roadmap for a journey you didn't expect, making it a little less daunting. Today's episode is a Good Life Project roundtable. So if you've never heard of that before, if you're a longtime listener but you missed last week, we're experimenting with adding a third weekly episode. It'll go for about a half an hour or so. And there are three of us sitting around a table in our studio in New York City. And my guests will be, quote, in residence for the better part of a month. So we'll be jamming each on some different topics for the better part of a month. It's an amazing way to really go deep with a few incredible people for a bit of a longer period of time. My guests today are Erin Moon, who is a yoga teacher, voice artist, philanthropist, and world traveler. She's doing some incredible work in the world. And along with her, Tara Moore, who's the author of Playing Big and does a lot of work around women's empowerment and also just really getting out of your own way. I'm really excited to dive into three powerful topics. These will range from the manifestations of God to the hero's journey, especially through a feminine lens, and the truth of pain in our lives, and can video games actually make a difference with that? So really excited to share these conversations and our guests and residents with you in today's episode. I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project. So why don't we come around to your second topic, Tara?
It's great how these are flowing together. My next topic is a sort of connected to Eastern religion topic. I read on Rick Hansen's blog, awesome Rick Hansen, for those who don't know him, look him up. He was mentioning that there are three primary manifestations of in the Hindu concept of God, and they are the destroyer, the creator, and the preserver. And I don't know a whole lot about the context there, but for me, it provoked this light bulb moment where I realized that I completely prioritize or my concept of the sacred is about the creator side and creativity, and that I would never think of destroyer energy as connected to anything sacred, and preserver energy is really boring. I'm an entrepreneur
type. Oh, God. Flatline,
like,
right?
Someone else just preserve right. things?
It's the God of moving sideways in life.
Keeping the fridge stocked with groceries and, restocking the dish soap.
The
like
Sanskrit
that.
Name for that god, by the way, is the cubicle god.
It was a big, what would it look like to treat all three of those energies as sacred And even if I'm not balanced around them in my own life, you know, is my team within my business balanced around them? And I was thinking about some of the destroyers, like the one of the things to me really that I connected with the destroyer energy is like the person who, when you're out at night, will be like, I have to go to bed now, and like kind of break up the party, which is never me. Like I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we do. Like I have been really tired for the past 2 hours, but I would never say that. I'm thinking like, I'm always really grateful when those people say that because we do all need to go to bed at some point. So I'm curious, you know, which you identify with and how you, what you honor in those three or not honor in your life or your work.
So
no, go.
No.
You would have thought. No, you go. You saw my thought.
Because you're
going
to take
head.
A – because I know – go where you need to go. I'm going to take a different approach here.
Okay. Okay. I love that idea. And what I find really fascinating is that we, again, Western society, because we're not faced with as much destruction in our daily lives as other parts of the world, like from my experience of being in rural Ecuador and doing volunteer work there. And then I did some volunteer work in Kenya as well. And a lot of the time you're faced with like, why are you here? just this kind of, you know, just it's there, it's latent in behind. And then when we would get talking, get to know each other more, working on the farm or working with kids or whatever, and they'd find out a little bit about me, I was immediately like, oh, you've been through something. Like you understand what destruction is. I didn't know that you guys ever had to deal with that. And what's been interesting to me is I realize, especially being the age that I am, we don't, not everybody in our Western society has to deal with much destruction in their life, especially in the early part of their life, like the first 40 to 50 years. You know, there's some big stuff, but not everybody, and certainly more people suffer than others. But because of that, we don't embrace that destructor, and it's like, it's not that you have to love it or seek it and that everything is born from it, but in a way there is this deconstruction that we have so that the other two can happen. Like you have to go to bed. And so I feel like I'm trying to actually explore the destruction a little bit more, or at least be okay with it, with where I'm like, oh, okay, so I'm going to put myself in this situation and it's probably going to blow up in my face. And I'm going to look at that and go, okay, so now what? Now I've learned something, or now this new opportunity is open to me. So I'm finding, because it happened to me, now I'm looking at it as a just as viable or valid a potential at any moment. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I suffer less, because mm-hmm. I see it as a real possibility in little tiny ways. It doesn't have to be in the huge ways, right? And that really great creation comes out of it. Yeah.
I'll take in a little bit of it. I mean, so, you know, we're both trained. So, like, you know, there are these three elements of, like, the Hindu gods. And I think it's fascinating to actually elevate those three qualities to the status of deity. You know, right. It's like each one is actually worthy of your attention and your worship. And there's a certain energy that they exert over the way that you participate in your life and in the world. Whether you want to just say that there's this, you know, those are three distinct, you know, energies that are out there, or they're, you know, like the three aspects of God. You're taught as a yoga teacher and a yoga student that Om, the word Om, is the sound of the universe, but actually it's often spelled AUM instead of OM. Mm-hmm. Each letter representing one of those, you know, like the three different aspects or the three different deities. What's funny is I was thinking in terms of like the way I build businesses and the way that I create ideas and take ideas from my head and into life. And if you ask my team, like, which one of those three I would be, they might tell you I am the destroyer.
Oh, interesting.
Because constantly there'll be things where, like, I can create. I'm nonstop creating.
Right.
Like, they'll also tell you I'm an idea terrorist. So I'm, like, I'm dropping bombs nonstop, constantly, all day, every day. Like, let's do this. What about this? What about this? What about this? But the flip side is that I'm also unusually comfortable with the destruction side, because I'll look at something, I'll be like, we built it. It's working. It's serving people. It's making money. It's cool. It's generating respect. It satisfies my ego, my bank account, my desire for impact and service. let's blow it up. And let's just start. And so I'm constantly doing that to the point where, you know, like now that's kind of like, you know, our team kind of knows that about me and they're prepped at any given moment. We need to start a Slack channel called like he's blowing it up again. Hashtag dope.
It's the feed under your newsreel.
Yeah, because I see that as like, so like I'm most alive when I'm creating. And I can't be creating if I'm in sustaining mode. So I'm least uncomfortable when I'm sustaining. I'm least happy when I'm in that middle place. And even though it's critical. So, you know, I will create. I'll preferably find other people, bring other people in to build all the sustaining part of it, the systems, the processes, and run it if that's where it needs to be. But I'm out. And then I'm like, let's destroy in the name of getting me back to the creative side of it as fast as we possibly can, even if it's working. And people look at me, they're like, why are you, like, you're good. You're like, what you've built is, just leave it, man. And I'm like, it's not about that. You know, it's like, because in my mind, I know we can create something better. And maybe that's a bit of a curse at the same time. You know, it's like there's a constant yearning, there's a constant discontent. But I don't think it's a curse if that's bundled with also a practice of awareness and gratitude. So it's not that I'm not grateful for what I have and where I am. I am, and I try and express it, and I try and honor that and own it and sit in it every day and express it to those who've helped me get this thing to where it is. But simultaneously, I think it's okay to yearn to create something different or better or bigger, and to continue sort of like, to me, if I'm not growing, I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. And that necessarily involves creation, you know, like sustaining and destruction,
you know, in a cycle. Have you always felt at home with that, or did you struggle with I should scale this thing to the moon?
No, I'm constantly struggling with that.
Yeah.
Constantly struggling with that. And until probably the last 5 years, there was a massive amount of blood in the water every time I went through the process because I didn't have the skill set to handle the uncertainty that goes along with it. My personal practices have gotten me to a place where I still feel it a lot, but I don't suffer the way that I used to. And I've also been through the cycle enough times now that I know that, like, I'm going to figure out a way through.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that just becomes evidence to make it easier each time you move through it.
Right. And I would say, you know, now in hindsight, looking back at the many chapters of your career, you can really see the divinity of that destroyer energy because of what it created room to birth, right? If that hadn't been allowed.
I mean, we're here right now having this like beautiful conversation with two amazing people and like building this incredible community and all this stuff because I blew a lot of stuff up along the way. And I will. I mean, same, both of you, same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a lot of creation and a lot of destruction to get you where you are right now.
Mm-hmm. And I love, I think it's our friend Jeffrey Davis who uses the term business artist.
Yeah.
You know, which when I think about this, it also brings up for me, to me, I always think of it as this spectrum where it's pure business, like what I was trained in my MBA, like we're just creating as many widgets as we can with the best margin we can. You know, that's the business side of the spectrum. And then the artist side is I'm creating for creation's sake. And the artist, I think, is not really interested that much in preserving or scaling what they build because they just want to go make the next painting, the next work, which I hear so much in what you're saying. And so now what I think all three of us are doing and so many creative entrepreneurs are doing, it's that blend. It's the business artist. And so there is this tricky territory of where we lean when it comes time where we feel like maybe the creative arc is complete. Yeah, something is thriving from a business perspective in the world.
To kind of let it go, to let it have its wings, to trust, like kind of going back to what you were saying much earlier in our conversation, to trust that when you put it out into the world that it's going to fly in whatever direction it's going to fly, it's going to be embraced in whatever way it's going to be embraced, but inevitably it's in a way that's almost the destruction part of it. It's almost like saying, here, and now we come back, so what do we have? Where are we starting from after we've let it go? Well,
and I think also sometimes you destroy it in the context of your life without destroying it. So the way I've done that is by selling companies.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here are the keys. And it's funny. It's like I've done that, you know, a couple of times now, and the companies were based around these beautiful communities. And people are like, how could you just hand over the keys and walk away and be totally good? And I'm like, because I'm done. and it was never, I never mm-hmm. defined, you know, like I never defined myself through that mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. And it would live on, but in the context of my life and where I want to go next, like I had to kind of destroy my relationship with it to create the space to sort of like move into the next cycle. Even though it survived, you know, and continues on.
And it survived in you. Like it has been also, it's not like it goes away. So there's this idea in Tantra yoga where it's like you put something into the fire, the karmic fire, the fire of destruction is just, you know, analogy and story around an idea. And you put that thing into the fire. And you have to, when you hand over the keys, you have to be so willing to see no part of it, to have nothing to do with it ever again. And what the beauty of that is, when you actually fully let go of it, it goes through the karmic fire and comes out clean. Like that's the catch. That's the, you know, end game. If I told you what the result of throwing it into the fire completely, completely without attachment, that it would come out clean, that you'd actually still have a piece of it, you'd be like, yay, throwing things into the fire all the time, right? But the truth of it is when you actually shed it entirely and you hand over those keys, that it does come back to you as a cleaner piece. And I would posit to say that of my knowledge of you and just how our relationship started and where you were in these build, destroy, is that each time you have handed over the keys, you have a piece of that thing that you created cleanly within that has helped you build the next thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Like it's not gone. I mean, you look even just of some of the people that you work with Good Life. I mean, they're some of the like old yogi pals.
Yeah, we bring some of the people along. It is interesting to see who's kind of like just keeps coming along for the journey, but we journey together differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's roll over to Erin. Topic number two.
Okay, so I want to talk about Star Wars, but it's actually kind of riffing off of where we've been, just slowly building. So spoiler alert, just in case we talk about anything to do with Star Wars and you haven't seen the movie yet?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, shoot.
I haven't either, but that's okay.
Let's talk about the old movies. So why I'm bringing it up is because the old movies, and particularly the first movie, so George Lucas and Joseph Campbell had a friendship, right? And so it's George Lucas's riff on the hero's journey, right? So my question is, because it's been coming up a lot, I've recorded some books about it, and it just is kind of a through line that keeps coming up, is do you think that it is the truth in the center of our development as a person? Is it a necessary journey? And because I think that destruction manifests differently for everybody, I'm also seeing it, this hero's journey, and when this, the big moment of everything kind of falling apart happens, I'm also noticing, because I'm at a point in my life where a lot of my friends are cusping around the 40 mark, and so they're having their midlife crises. And it's really fascinating for me, and also because people are having kids later. So they're coming to this wall, they're running towards that little hole in the wall that they made of their goal and their thing that they thought their lives were going to be when they were 20. And they're running towards that little hole, and then they hit that little, they realize as they're getting closer, oh no, the hole, it's so small.
I'm going to lose an arm.
Right,
it's like, it looks really tiny in the distance, and you get that, oh, it is really tiny.
Yeah. And then they hit the wall, they've got a circle on their cheek, and they fall back, you know? And in that, I don't know, just kind of riffing on that idea of hitting who you thought you were going to be for the first 30 years of your life, and then you start to kind of live your life in your 30s, and then you know, shit happens, or life just, it's, you have to reconcile who you actually are now versus who you planned to be, and yeah, just the hero's journey in general, and Star Wars.
I mean, the hero didn't have a baby. Like, it's an interesting question. You know, is the protagonist in these stories always male because we're talking about a masculine journey, or is it always male because we live in a culture where only men get to be protagonists for the most part, you know, or boys? And, you know, when you really start to think about how many went from Harry Potter to Star Wars, how much of our central cultural mythology is about a father-son relationship, it's kind of staggering. I'm sure you think about this with your daughter. Yeah. Like, what movie do you take her to? It is really mind-boggling to me when we, you know, think about – it's like the whole idea of a journey where you leave home presupposes that there's nobody at home who really needs you right then. And, you know, my sense – and I'm very influenced here by my colleague Leanne Raymond, who is a brilliant writer and coach and teacher, and is doing a lot of work on this sort of looking at the hero's journey as – a journey of individuation, but that's not the only journey we take in our lives. And there's also, that's a journey outward, and there's a journey that's also about rootedness and going down and inward. And yeah, so that's, I think, where I fall in it right now. It's like it's a journey, but it's not the journey. And it just happens to be the one that has become central in our culture because we haven't yet had the like volume of women writing about their lives.
Do you think it's the when it's presented in these stories, do you think it's the external presentation of that inward hero's journey that we kind of, that there is an innate inward coming to God moment or destruction that is innate in human development, that what draws us towards the liking of things like Star Wars, and by the way, the new one has a female protagonist. What? Which is nice. Yeah, yeah, finally. Although I think there's going to be some daddy issues, but, you know, as opposed to mummy issues, which would be more interesting. Right. But that what draws us towards the book, the movie, the story is that it is our story?
Yes. Yes. And like I certainly, you know, like when I'm working with women around what are our callings, we look at the hero's journey and like first we hear the call, then we resist the call. We say not me to the call, you know, then we finally have to surrender to the call, even though we don't feel ready, and drawing on all of those traditional stories. It's just that I also feel that blueprint made sense for this in the phase of my life, and now even for the section of my life that's about my expression in the world, you know, and that there's something totally else going on, not just if you have children, but around relationship and negotiating your needs and others' needs, you know, that's as fundamental a human journey that just isn't represented yet as much.
Yeah.
So I look at, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert, You Pray Love, Shell Strayed. Wow.
Right.
The classic hero's journey, but told very much through the lens of women. You know, so I think there are like really big public representations of women going out there and taking those journeys and telling those stories, certainly far fewer than being told than men. But, you know, like when like those books were hit, I mean, massive, massive sellers. And I would venture to guess that the majority of the audience were women, not men. You know, so the question in my mind is a yearning to go through a similar journey, or is it a yearning to arrive at the same awakening? The challenge with the hero's journey that a lot of people don't want to hear, whether you're a male or female, is that it's freaking brutal. Yeah. I mean, it's horrendous. It's gutting. It's destructive. It's like the whole, you know, you meet the ordeal and, you know, you enter the darkest cave of your life. You know, and you essentially, your soul becomes obliterated. Your being and your life as you know it becomes destroyed to create space for the new you and the elixir to arise from those ashes. You know, this is, so I think a lot of us look at the hero's journey and we're like, we want what the person's coming home with.
You and know, we think we see it in little ways in our life, like, oh, I had a really bad year and it was tough.
And I think, you know, part of the question for me has always been, and I think it's kind of like tying in with all this, is do you have to go through that, like all 12 steps at that level to get to the point where you find the elixir and you come home? Or is there a gentle pass through the hero's or the heroine's journey that can take you to that same place without such unrelenting violence.
Yeah.
Along the way. I don't know the answer to that. Like, is it because, you know, so Joseph Campbell was a dude who basically, like, put together, you know, the idea of the hero's journey slash monomyth, but he studied it. He didn't create it. It was the amalgam of studying thousands of years of cultural representations of this. And I don't know, Tara, maybe you know better than me, whether a lot of the things that he looked at were based on male protagonists as he went through the mythology. I'm guessing it probably was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, what if the story were told through the eyes of a heroine?
Right. Like a new mom. Like, I have friends who are, like, you know, in their late 30s, early 40s, having their first baby. And I feel like what they described to me is the hero's journey. Like, I have one friend who said to me, she's like, my child had to break my will for us to both to survive. Mm. My child had to break my will. She's like, it's not that way for everybody. My will was strong. But I was the wild horse that he had to break, or neither one of us was going to survive the ordeal of his cholera, you know, like his him having digestive issues, or like just all of a sudden my life is no longer my own solely after spending so much more of our life as our own. And so I'm really interested about what you have to say about this because of your community and your own journey, what that aspect of having things like having a child late or getting to this point in our life and we're, you know, completely like in GLP, there's tons of people who come to camp who are at a come to Jesus moment in their life or have had, whether it's trauma, new motherhood, whatever it is that's brought them to this point, or just like been at the same job their whole life and realize I'm dissatisfied and I have X amount of my life potentially left. You know, at these moments, and maybe it is the lighter version sometimes of that hero's journey, but is it like a,
and I'm thinking about Elizabeth Gilbert has recently been talking about when she was speaking about her book, this experience where a woman came to her and described that since she had read Eat, Pray, Love, and she was wanting to go on her own journey, but she had caregiving responsibilities and she couldn't. And so she had this coffee can and she was saving up for, you know, this time when she was going to go on her journey, and she'd been saving for 20 years. And Elizabeth Gilbert was really moved by that and was telling the story about it. And I thought that was really interesting that both that woman and Liz were saying, yeah, that's good. Your plan, you know, Liz was saying, have a plan and wait. Which was really different than saying, try to do it while you have your caregiving responsibilities. And, you know, so I still, you know, even knowing, yes, Eat, Pray, Love resonated, Wild resonated, but I wonder if it's resonating because so many women can't figure out a way to live that adventure, you know, while they are also feeling tied to home. And there has been work looking at what's the heroine's journey. There's Maureen Murdoch's book on the heroine's journey. You know, there's a few. I think that we're still looking for that. And I don't think it's a different journey for women, but that there's feminine and masculine energies in our life. And the archetypal hero's journey is more coming from that yang part of us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be nice if there was a more feminine interpretation of that story, because – and maybe I'm making the assumption that more feminine interpretation of the story might actually be more accommodating to the realities of the human condition and more humane.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's valid, maybe it's
right.
not. So I apologize if it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that has been an enduring question for me, is do we actually have to go to that place to get to the place that the outcome we so desperately want to
get
to?
Well, and are we going to that place, or is it our egos going to that place?
Yeah.
I think what gets beat up is just our egos, which, you know, ultimately is probably a good thing.
I think sometimes, for sure. Yeah. But I think also, like, depending on what's the cause of the break, I think sometimes, because if it's a traumatic event, that it's like you didn't ask for, you know.
Yeah, you get thrust into it.
Exactly. It gets thrust upon you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't mean our egos, like our confidence, but our ego sense of ourselves is what gets challenged, that level of our identity.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I'm interested about this young mom idea, because I've had so many friends now.
Yeah.
And I have one friend who recently said, I feel like I'm mourning my yes. old life, my old who I was, mm. my old life. Even after, like, this one couple, they were in Thailand for, you know, 2 months with their 3-year-old and their brand new baby. Like, blah, oh, I love people who do stuff like that. And she came back and they're having a normal life. And she just posted, she was like, I feel like I'm mourning my old self. To me, it's got whisperings
yeah.
of the hero's journey in it, that this level and this distraction sustaining yeah. in birth, right?
I think after we should map it out.
We'll I'm see. Fascinated we'll,
we're
going
to like take the 12 steps and see
if it works.
How they apply to
I'm seeing like a book arising in this conversation. It's like the new improved hero / heroine journey by Tara, Erin, and Jonathan.
Right.
By our new publishing arm.
Idea man, idea man.
Tell your team.
Right. Hold on 1 second. They hate me again. So I guess we'll zoom around. So really interesting article that I was reading on the science of healing and placebos and stuff like that. And I've been kind of fascinated these days about, not just these days, but probably for years, kind of around the truth of pain in our lives and how much of it is actually... Like, how much of pain is in your brain's interpretation of whatever signal is coming into it, and how much of it is a matter of, like, whatever the circumstance is that's causing it. And there was a line in this article that I was reading. There's a little section that kind of, like, really grabbed me about kind of a fascinating thing. So I'm going to read it to you. They were asking about they were talking to blanking on this right now. Oh, she's right here. Science journalist Joe Marchant. And there was a moment because, and this really tied into something I've been exploring lately, where they asked about burn victims who were being treated with virtual reality. And they asked her to explain it. She said, this is another therapy I got to try. Researchers in Seattle have developed a virtual reality landscape called Snow World. You fly around inside an ice canyon and fire snowballs at characters inside the game, such as penguins and snowmen. It's meant to work as a painkiller. The idea is that the brain has a limited capacity for attention. So if the ice canyon commands that attention, there's less capacity left over for experiencing pain. And she writes, when I tried Snow World, the researchers used a heated box to simulate a burn to my foot. It was quite painful outside the game, but once immersed, I had so much fun I barely noticed it. And I found this to be true in my own life too. So I'm somebody who unfortunately has dealt with headaches for almost the entirety of my life. And what I noticed is that, and I noticed this teaching yoga years ago, this was probably the thing that where it became most apparent to me. I'd wake up, I'd have a screaming headache. And I knew at noon, there would be 40 people waiting on mats for me to actually be present and to be upbeat and to be like to give them everything I had for 90 minutes. And the thought of walking into that room for me was just horrendous. All I wanted to do was curl up in a ball and hide in a corner with the lights off. But this was my obligation. This is my job, you know. I also came to know that when I would step into the room within about a minute, there was no headache. And it wasn't because there was nothing that changed in my brain. There was nothing that changed in the state of inflammation in my body or the actual circumstance that was causing it. But I was so – I had the ability to just really drop into the present. I was there to teach. And the way I taught also, I think, really tied into it, which is that I didn't ever map or script anything as a yoga teacher, as Erin knows very well. And I would wing, you know, 90 minutes. If you stopped me at any given moment in time and asked me what's coming next, what are you going to say, what pose is coming next, I'd be like – whatever tumbles out of my mouth is exactly what's coming next. And that demanded such hyper focus in the moment for me to not, you know, to actually deliver something valid, that my awareness had to be utterly there. And for that moment in time, for those 90 minutes, I ceased to have a headache. And then, like, within 5 minutes or so after, once I kind of dropped out of that place, it would come zooming back. Sometimes not as fiercely, but oftentimes just as fiercely. And then it really started to make me really question, you know, there's a lot of pain that comes from all parts of life, you know, and we tend to think, this is broken, this is disease, this is the condition that I have, you know, therefore I am, like, I'm going to suffer X amount. And it just is what it is. You know, like, that's the way that pain works, stimulus response. And my experience teaching with headaches and also then sort of stumbling upon this really fascinating experience with virtual reality and people who are, you know, burn patients, it just kind of opened this question again of how much of the suffering and the pain that we create in our lives is about attention.
So this is one of the things that excites me absolutely the most about yoga and about therapeutics is this idea that nociception, so nociception, you have like these little cells that say, oh, I'm in pain, right? So I cut my finger, my nociception cells tell my brain I have cut my finger, out. Does not, so nociception does not predicate pain all the time.
It's just, like, it's an electrical impulse.
That is something that is, but you can have pain with no nociception cells saying, I have pain. This is a phantom limb thing, right? So when you put the mirror down so that somebody who has lost a limb can look at, they put their hand on one side and then they put their hand that is still there on one side of the mirror and it looks like they have two hands and they're moving it. And somebody who has suffered the lost limb pain for a long time, all of a sudden, gone. Right? So these ideas, the virtual reality snow idea is, and mindfulness practices, breath. So a lot of the breath practices that we're going to be teaching the soon to be new teachers and the clinic in Botswana, the whole point to them is, how am I distracting? How am I concentrating and distracting my mind on top of coming back to my parasympathetic nervous system, my chill pill? How am I coming back to stasis on just a nervous system level? And the two, they sometimes can go together, and that it's about stress that's creating a really kind of a blocking of the natural opiates inside of your brain that are actually able to say you're okay, you're not in pain. Sometimes the distraction technique, one of the sutras talks about it too in yoga. And this idea of, if I'm putting my thumb on one side of my nose and breathing in through one side of my nose and putting my finger on the other side of my nose, breathing out and doing this little thing, that in and of itself, just that action, that real deep concentration that's necessary to go, what nostril am I breathing in and out of with what finger, is a thing that can reduce pain.
And by the way, I was never able to keep track. No. For the record.
When we were doing the manual, we were like, should we really? I mean, counting three in, holding two, four out. And I was like, yep, because that it's hard is the thing that'll make it work. That it's something you have to concentrate on will be the potential for pain relief. And not to say that there aren't other things and anti-inflammatories and blah, blah, blah. But this idea of, how am I, the distraction or the reconcentration of your brain's energy being the thing that alleviates pain. To me, it's been a reality in a lot of these practices for thousands of years. And we're just, science is catching up. We're just finding our research that says, yeah, it works. It works. It's that. It can be, on some level, that simple. I love it.
Any thoughts on this or experiences?
Yeah, certainly distraction, you know, for me, and I was very, very ill for like the first 4 months of my pregnancy and just round the clock. And so I really got to see, you know, how helpful distraction was. And I remember, like, at one point I was talking to a very like crunchy hippie friend, and I was like, I'm watching like, you know, 12 hours of TV a day. And she was like, Tara, do you think there's something that you could do that would be more like mindful, where, you know, you're not connected? And I was like, you have no idea what it's like to be in this body right now. Like, no, I cannot survive.
You're like, you don't understand.
Like,
I have the 40-year-old virgin on reruns. It's not even, it's one movie nonstop.
I watched all of Felicity, and as I was getting to the end, I cried. Like, I was crying because I was also so hormonal. I was crying to my husband, like, how am I going to make Felicity last until this morning sickness goes away? But I really saw distraction work. And then I also would be amazed how, you know, I could be so, so sick. And it was when I was in conversation with different publishers about the book too. And so I'd have to get on these conference calls and pitch the book, and somehow I would. And I think it's very interesting, the point you're making about concentration, because I would be able to do that. But then when I would say, like, I can go on a walk today. I can. And I would invite a friend over and be like, well, with a visit and a walk, you know, I literally wouldn't be able to I would fall asleep in the middle of a conversation with them. I wouldn't, you know, be able mm-hmm. to stand up. So that sense of and with your yoga class, like mission and work and concentration is really interesting.
Yeah, that like super, super focus. Yeah. That's necessary to play a game well. Or because when you're walking with a friend, you're kind of like, oh, bird and oh, this and like, or whatever it is that's yeah. getting to you. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's funny because some people, you know, might say, well, but that's, you know, but that's not really, you know, that's not, you know, like if you take a pill, you know, that really is going to get rid of your headache because, you know, it changes your, you know, like whatever it is in your brain, even though most people have no idea how most pills really work. Mm-hmm. Like that's the real cure is the procedure or the pill. What you're doing is just deluding yourself into thinking that you're not in pain when you really are.
And what's wrong with that again?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And that's my whole thing. I'm like,
It's free.
Right. Is there some, like, who cares? If the end state is the end state, okay.
Well, and because we don't know what is or is not causing pain. Like, we're talking about pain, and it's like, okay, but are we talking about an actual physical something that is causing that? We know we could diagnose there is a pinched nerve in the blah, blah, blah of this joint, and this is what's happening. So, okay, we know that there is pain because we've known from research that that nerve is being hurt. But a lot of people suffer different sorts of pain that are trapped in, like trauma fear or early childhood trauma that is actually manifesting physically in their body in some way, or an old pain that has made a signal. There's a feedback loop happening. There's actually nothing wrong with that thing that's hurt, you know, or broken anymore, but the feedback loop has gotten stuck. And so how do we kind of get in there with the feedback loop? We can with medicine sometimes, but we also have these potential other techniques, like, because the burn victims, they are in pain. They have every scientific reason to feel nociception-driven pain, but it works even in that circumstance, which is even more fascinating.
Yeah. You know, it's like if a tree falls inside your head and there's no way to get inside your head to get hit by it, like.
And pain is pain.
Well, and it's interesting that we also get out of emotional pain when we're concentrating on our work. Mm. The whole idea of the self, and like if you're defining yourself as not as your body, but as your consciousness can become one with what you're doing or one with the television show you're watching and then become less connected to the circumstances that might be going on mm-hmm. your body.
Mm, yeah, like that. And that was our second ever Good Life Project Roundtable. I hope you're enjoying this format and the wisdom, the incredible kindness and generosity and lens of our guests in residence this week. Erin Moon and Tara Moore will be back next week with the final installment with these guests in residence before we move into our second round of guests. If you like this format, let us know. Let me know on whatever social platform feels right to you. And go ahead and find a way to share the show. If it feels great, then leave a rating over on iTunes for us. I'm Jonathan Fields, signing off for Good Life Project.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.